This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour, the week in review.
Hello, this is Joel Hilliker, managing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Our panel of writers is here ready to discuss the important events of the week. And we're going to start by introducing each of them to you. Here in the studio, we have Jeremiah Jacques.
Great to be here. I'll be talking about the people in Okinawa, Japan, protesting the presence of the U.S. military with renewed urgency and what it could mean for the U.S.-Japan security agreement.
We also have Anthony Chibadirwe.
Hello. Today, we'll talk about the connections linking the following entities and locations: Iran, Iraq, Fallujah, the Islamic State, Libya, and the continent of Europe.
Very ambitious. We also have Andrew Miller.
Great to be here. Today we'll be talking about the latest round of violent riots against the Trump campaign, as well as the U.S. militia movement and what they just don't understand about American society.
And via Skype from our office in Britain, we have Richard Palmer.
Good afternoon. I'll be talking about how Britain is discovering this week that it can't defend its borders. Migrants are starting to try and come over in small boats, but cuts to our Navy mean that we can't stop them.
Now, you may have noticed that on this show, we really try to give you a broad overview of important events from all over the world. The Trumpet is based in the United States, but we have staff in the United Kingdom, in Jerusalem, in Australia. Our staff watches every corner of the world, and we really endeavor to assemble the best, most prophetically significant news from around the world. In today's show, though, you're going to see a strong common thread running through these stories. There is really a geopolitical earthquake happening in the world today, and that is the decline of America and also Britain. And a major theme that the Trumpet has talked about for decades is this decline, but it's becoming more and more pronounced, and we're seeing major effects of that decline all over the world. If you're watching Europe, if you're watching Asia or the Middle East in particular, but also Africa and Latin America, you see the dramatic effects of America's decline. And we're going to start today with a story out of Germany. It's being caught, this nation is being caught having to make a choice between siding with America or Russia. And to tell us about that choice, we'll turn to our man in Britain, Richard.
Yes, there are some early hints now that Germany might switch and might still decide to side with Russia. We're in the very early stages of that now, so it's hard to tell how far this will go. But if they do indeed make that switch, then it could be huge. You know, that would be an absolute geopolitical earthquake, one of the biggest pieces of news of 2016. It would completely revolutionize global geopolitics. And the kind of the smaller area where we're seeing indications that this could happen comes over sanctions with Ukraine. So after Russia invaded Crimea, America and Europe slapped sanctions on Russia. And there was a lot of speculation at the time that this could potentially split Europe away from America. That didn't happen then. But now there are indications that Germany is looking at ending those sanctions. So recently, Sigmar Gabriel, the German vice chancellor, he gave a speech where he was talking about how we must start talking to Russia again. Nothing is solved by isolating Russia. He said that the time has come for a step-by-step easing of sanctions. Then the German foreign minister, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, he gave a talk on Tuesday where he basically said the same thing, a step-by-step easing of sanctions. And Spiegel is reporting that behind the scenes, the German government has long since developed concrete plans for a step-by-step easing of the sanctions against Russia. So America is wants sanctions to continue. Germany now and a whole load of other European countries are saying it's time to start ending them.
What is motivating Germany to take these steps?
Well, Germany is really hurting. And actually, this continued division from Russia and is harming some of their core vital interests and actually poses a serious threat to Germany. So one of the things that Mr. McDonald talked about when he was on this show last week was about how dependent Germany is on exports. And he really explained very well how central that is, not just to their economy, but just their whole way of doing business as a nation, their whole prosperity as a nation, their general power as a nation. And so sanctions with Russia really hit that. It hurts the business that they can do with Russia, and they have in the past been a major trading partner with Russia. But it also hurts all of Europe, because there are a whole bunch of other nations that are hurting because they can't do deals with Russia. If they're hurting, that means they're buying fewer goods from Germany, and so it spreads the hurt onto Germany that way. And then perhaps even more significantly, Germany, this threatens the survival of the European Union. We quote an article from George Friedman in the Trumpet Weekly, and he talks about how the European Union is in a very fragile state right now, and this continuing animosity with Russia could tear the European Union apart. You've got nations in the West that really don't really care much about a conflict with Russia, while heightened tensions causing Poland, causing the Baltics to become really nervous. And so Germany's economy, as Mr. McDonald covered, needs the Eurozone, needs Europe to stick together. This continued hostility with Russia threatens that. Therefore, Germany has a huge incentive and need, really, to dial back those tensions with Russia.
This is a huge blind spot in American foreign policy, too. We really rely on the transatlantic alliance, as we call it, between America and the European Union to geopolitically counterbalance the Russian-Chinese alliance. But even apart from what Steinmeier or any of the other leaders of Germany or the European Union are saying, even at the grassroots level in Germany, if you look at the opinion polls, public support for the United States is about 50%. Public support for China is about 50%. Public support for Russia is not quite 50%, but I think it's pretty close. So even at the grassroots level, they could go either way. There's definitely a schizophrenia there that they're not sure whose team they want to be on. And if America ever loses the European Union from their team, I mean, you've got like 2/3 of the world's economy against you.
It reminds me of what we were talking about on Wednesday, Richard, when we were just talking about Europe's efforts to create a European army independent of NATO. Here's another indication that they're choosing this break with the United States.
Right, absolutely. And really, on its own, I don't think the talk about sanctions is enough to indicate that there is a break coming. But then when you put that alongside this American-less NATO that France and Germany are working on right now, then it starts to paint a really compelling picture that they're considering their options here, and they're thinking about becoming independent from NATO. And as we spoke from America, and as we spoke about on Wednesday, you know, the Europe and especially France has been very explicit that they want a defense union without America. They don't want to depend upon America. NATO officials have been complaining to the press that France is no longer interested in NATO and that they don't trust America anymore, and so they're concentrating all their effort on this European defense union. And that's something that needs to be put in place for this break, and it's something else that shows that they're considering this break.
We've talked quite a bit over the years about the potential for some kind of agreement, some kind of rapprochement between Germany and Russia, and also a transatlantic break. And here you see both of those at least moving in that direction. You see the case being made within Germany for doing exactly what we've been saying and what the Bible prophesies is going to happen.
Absolutely. And even if this doesn't happen under Miss Merkel, she's probably one of the most Russo-skeptic leaders within Germany. The pressures that we talked about at the start that are pushing Germany to find a rapprochement with Russia are still going to be there. They're going to be around for quite some time. And just about everybody else on the left, people like Sigmar Gabriel and Steinmeier, on the right, we've written in the Trumpet about Stoiber and Gutenberg, from the Christian Social Union going to visit Putin, they're all much more pro-Russian. So even if when the sanctions are up for discussion in July, they don't lift them, the pressures are going to continue, and just about any potential successor to Angela Merkel is going to be much more pro-Russian than she is.
Well, Richard, keep us updated on what Germany decides to do about those sanctions and what happens in Europe with respect to their relationship with Russia. And we appreciate you bringing that report to us. America has had a strong presence in Japan ever since World War II. And for a long time, Japan welcomed that presence, but that has been changing in recent years. Friction has been rising over the American military being over there. And an event this week increased that friction. To learn more about this, we'll turn to Jeremiah.
Yes, most of those U.S. troops are on the island of Okinawa. And right now, many of the people on Okinawa are protesting the presence of those troops with renewed urgency and rage. Many of these people have had misgivings about the American troops for years and years, but the animosity is suddenly much more intense because last month, an American man living on one of the bases was arrested for the rape and murder of a 20-year-old Japanese woman. This man was no longer a U.S. soldier, but he had formerly been a Marine, and at the time of the crime, he was a civilian employee living on the Kadena Air Base there in Okinawa. And at the time of his arrest, this American man apparently confessed to having committed those unspeakable crimes, and it has caused a huge uproar among the Japanese people on the island. Hundreds of them have assembled for protests, just demanding that the U.S. shut down its bases and go back home and just get off of the island and out of Japan. And part of the reason for the rage is that this is not the first time something like this has happened with the Americans living on Japanese military bases. Back in 1995, there was a very high-profile case in which three American servicemen were convicted of the abduction, rape, and murder of a 12-year-old Japanese girl on Okinawa. And some 85,000 Japanese people took to the streets after that diabolical crime to demand that the U.S. military leave Okinawa. And then there have been a few other less egregious incidents from time to time since then. So this recent arrest and these most recent protests are really just the latest, but it is causing some Japanese to just really intensify their demands for the U.S. bases to be shut down. So they're out in the streets, they're protesting. I've got a statement here from Suzuyo Takazato. She's a representative of Okinawa Women Act Against Military Violence. Right after the arrest, she said, "This incident is a prime example of the violent nature of the military. The incident reminds us that it can happen to any women on Okinawa, us, our daughters or granddaughters. Reducing the presence of the military is not good enough. All the military bases must go." And then other protesters are waving signs saying such things as, "Never forgive Marines rape." Another sign said, "You killers go home." Another one says, "Withdraw all the U.S. forces from Okinawa." And they've got another massive protest set for June 19th, coming up a little later this month. The organizers are hoping that this one will bring together even more demonstrators than the 85,000 that turned out back in 1995. I don't think this protest will end up being that large, and I don't think that this will end up being the event that shuts all the U.S. bases down. But it does reveal the weakness of that relationship, and these latest crimes and protests, they will further weaken Japan's reliance on the United States. So this is it's really significant because the Trumpet is expecting Japan to return to full-fledged military power status. And as long as the U.S. has its 50,000 troops stationed there, that would not really happen. But with animosity toward those troops growing, they could eventually be expelled. And that would clear the way for Japan to fully and rapidly develop its military power once again.
That's quite a story. Really shameful that Americans' personal behavior is putting such a black mark on the country. I mean, it shows just how much of a difference a few individuals making those kinds of mistakes or committing those kinds of crimes can really have major geopolitical ramifications and reflect very poorly on the country. We'll definitely keep our eyes on that. We appreciate you bringing that prophetic focus to that story as well. You're listening to Trumpet Hour, our week in review program on 101.3 KPCG. Another region of the world where the U.S. has played a significant role is Libya. The U.S. helped to oust former dictator Muammar Gaddafi, and that nation has since fallen into significant disarray. To tell us about the latest developments in this North African nation, we'll go to Anthony Chibadwe.
I want to start with a little bit of the positive developments that have been happening in Libya. As our listeners might be aware of, Libya has been a mess for all these years since Gaddafi was deposed. It has had two rival governments in two different cities. That's almost unheard of in modern times. But recently, they formed a unity government, and it's backed by the international community. It's backed by the UN. So that will stabilize things a little bit. But there are still some armed factions in Libya, and the biggest and most organized of those is led by a general, Khalifa Haftar. Now, he has been the most successful in fighting against terrorists like the Islamic State, but he doesn't recognize the unity government yet. He wants the unity government to disband some of the armed groups that are aligned with it before he can recognize it. So already there are still some problems. The United Nations Special Envoy to Libya, he's a German diplomat named Martin Kobler. He has called on unity. He has called for these groups, the different groups in Libya, to fight against their main enemy, which is the Islamic State, and not fight against each other. Now, it remains to be seen how united they will be, but right now, these groups, they are not fighting together against this big problem that they have. So if they do not unite, we might continue to have big problems in Libya. Now, Kobler was asked about international intervention, and he said that this is not the time to ask about foreign intervention, but he says that he foresees time in the future when the international community might get more involved to support Libya if they are asked to do that. Already he said that they need better weapons, and he is calling on the lifting of a 5-year arms embargo on Libya to fight the Islamic State. So if these groups remain divided, we can expect Libya to continue to be a mess. Now, if the Islamic State grows stronger in Libya, we still can expect Libya to remain a big mess. And in fact, that's what we're expecting, Islamic State growing in Libya. The United Nations released a report yesterday saying that as the Islamic State is losing ground in Iraq and Syria, which we'll talk about a little bit later, as it's losing ground in those areas, it's gaining ground in Libya. So that's a very worrying development, because Libya is the Islamic State's launching pad to Europe. There's an article in the Trumpet Weekly that quotes the CNN. There's a Western diplomat who told CNN that the Islamic State is exploiting the smuggling networks from North Africa into Europe to get their militants into Europe. So that's a very worrying development. The article from CNN is titled "ISIS on Europe's Doorstep." So we can if Libyan factions don't unite, if the Islamic State continues growing in Libya, we can expect more intervention, more European involvement in Libya because of the threat it poses to the continent.
Well, thanks for that, Anthony. I would encourage listeners to go to kpcg.fm and listen to the program that Stephen Fleury did, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show this morning, where he was just talking about how much Iran, the king of the South, has used the Islamic State's rise to its advantage. And Libya is such a mess. The Islamic State is certainly taking advantage of that situation in the short term. But in the long run, we expect that nation, just looking at biblical prophecy, to fall into the orbit of Iran. And it'll be interesting to watch the way that situation unfolds, how Iran ends up turning it to its own advantage. But as you said, Anthony, you can definitely see how Europe would be very concerned about what's happening there, and it could presage a real conflict between Europe and these Islamic forces. We appreciate you bringing that story to us. This is Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio 101.3. We'll have one more story before the break. This past Wednesday, we spoke with Andrew Miller about some of the protests, even violent protests, that have happened against Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. And to give us a little more information about this, we'll turn back to Andrew.
Yeah, well, we did talk about this Wednesday, and then I got into work this morning and saw that there was actually another protest last night in San Jose, California. The local news sources are saying this is the biggest, most violent political protest in San Jose in decades. They had hundreds of protesters, the typical police lined up with riot gear against them that we've seen so much in the newsreels these past few months. Dozens of fights, the waving of the Mexican flags, and the burning of the Making America Great hats. And then several injuries. I think the police were pelted with eggs and rocks and traffic cones and water bottles and pretty much anything else people could tend to get their hands on. If you watch the footage, there's one young woman there who was had her face gouged pretty bad by a flying metal parking barricade. But it does just really enforce that narrative that we were talking about on Wednesday about how this is just becoming more so common, where it gets these protesters, these far left protesters against the Trump campaign, who are more, they're not interested in political discourse anymore. They're just interested in chucking rocks at people's faces. And we have an article in our Trumpet Weekly this week by Cal Thomas in USA Today, who's actually saying that a lot of political analysis are seeing that unwittingly this is actually kind of helping Trump. That's kind of, they harken back to the Nixon era. They said that's kind of how Richard Nixon was elected in 1968, as you had the hippie new left protest in the streets, and the majority of Americans were just so scared of these people as they rioted and pillaged that they voted for someone who they probably wouldn't have voted for otherwise to stop that. And there is it is much more dangerous than people realize, as you get into like this negative feedback loop where you get people who riot against Trump supporters, which inadvertently causes more people to support Trump. And then the people who are willing to use violence against him in the first place get more desperate, so they riot more, and then more people, and you just, it keeps going with the division, just keeps heightening and heightening and heightening, and using more extreme measures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a way, the fact that these protesters are doing what they're doing, they're so in your face about it with Make Mexico Great Again, Brown Pride signs, and just really inflaming people's fears. It's kind of proving Mr. Trump's point in a lot of ways.
Right. I mean, I think at one point Mr. Trump called Bernie Sanders a communist, and the media kind of mocked him for that. But yet, in the Chicago protest, you had all these radical supporters actually waving this. I don't think this happened in San Jose this weekend, but this was in Chicago back in March. They were actually waving the Soviet Union flag during their protests. So, I mean, like I said, they're supporting even the more extreme accusations, or what would be regarded as extreme accusations, the Trump campaign's making. And it is scaring people who normally wouldn't like someone like Donald Trump to realize that, well, we better vote for him. Otherwise, we're going to have these people who are burning American flags and waving Mexican flags and waving communist flags and throwing rocks at our police officers. They're going to get control of the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Andrew. You're listening to Trumpet Hour. Coming up, we're going to talk about cuts to the British Navy, how China is confronting America in the South China Sea, recent events in Iraq, and what the militia movement in the United States doesn't understand about Americans. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Trumpet Hour, the Week in Review.
Probably the most requested, most popular book in our literature library is The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong. This book explains the historical link between these two nations, and it shows also how their future is linked as well. Mr. Armstrong tracked the decline of Britain over a period of decades in the 20th century, and he said that just like the sun sets earlier in Britain than it does in America, the same thing is going to happen in America. But we still see these trends in decline in Britain. And to tell us about one that we saw this week, we will go back to the UK and hear from Richard Palmer.
Britain has about 7,700 miles of coastland. Now, the total number of border patrol vessels that it has to keep that coast secure is currently 3. That's according to figures from the Daily Mail, that Britain has 3 border patrol boats. Now, there are other, you know, police will have speed boats. The Navy will have boats around the country. But in terms of boats allocated to the border patrol force for keeping those shores secure, it's 3. And that's been a big story from Britain this week, is how vulnerable these borders are. Illegal immigrants have just started to trickle in from Europe. And the leader of the House of Commons, Chris Grayling, he warned that the English Channel could soon look more like the Mediterranean, with, quote, fleets of small boats coming over to Britain. And so just as we have people coming over from Turkey into Greece, from Libya into Italy, they could now start coming across to Britain. And this is exposing just how thoroughly incapable Britain is to deal with that. So there's just 3 dedicated border patrol boats. A program of aerial surveillance over Britain's borders and Britain's coastline was scrapped earlier in the year to save money. So it just really vividly exposes how Britain is making itself vulnerable, not taking its security seriously in order to cut costs.
And so what are some of the ramifications of that? What are the consequences that Britain faces because of that failure to protect itself?
Well, the most immediate that a lot of people are worried about now is illegal immigrants coming over to Britain. The migrant crisis hasn't affected Britain as directly as it has a lot of the rest of Europe, just because it's a lot harder to get to Britain. You've got to not just cross the Mediterranean, you've then got to cross Europe, then you've got to cross the English Channel. But now you've got nations, you know, like a lot of European nations are starting to get less and less friendly to immigrants. They're starting to get full, starting to refuse to take in any more. So there's a growing incentive for people to try crossing the channel. So there's that concern. At the same time, you've got the same concerns about terrorists coming in amongst those migrants that the rest of Italy and other nations in Europe share. But just much more broadly, one of the key functions of a government is to defend its borders, is to make sure that it controls what comes in and out of its country. And if the government, if the military, if the Navy have been compromising with that, then what does that say about the general security and safety of the nation? It indicates that there could be a lot of real dangers elsewhere. Just to give one other just quote about how bad this situation is in terms of the borders. The former head of the Navy, Lord West, he called the situation a complete mess. He said, we need to get a grip on this. We're taking a gamble that nothing will ever happen in our seas, and that is a risky view to take given the dangerous world we are in. And he's absolutely right.
The point about just how this reflects a failure of imagination on the part of British leaders to recognize the severity of the threats facing the country, in spite of the evidence that they have within their own shores, the fact of recent terrorist attacks and the immigration crisis that's besieging Europe more generally, their inability to recognize the importance of defending themselves against this, it's really quite extraordinary.
That's true. But it's not just our leaders' fault. Britain is living well beyond its means. If they cut the NHS, money from Britain's National Health Service, they're going to face massive protests, could well be voted out of office. They're already getting very heavily criticized for not spending enough on the NHS, when actually spending on the NHS is increasing by billions. If they cut social programs, I mean, they have cut those to a certain extent. If they cut those more, if they cut pensions, if they cut any of these other things, there's going to be massive protests. they're going to be filled with negative press. But you cut the military, no one cares. There's no protests. There'll be one or two grumpy columns in the newspaper, but nowhere near the same massive outcry that they would get. And, you know, these people are human, so you can see why they would take the easy option. And it's a great discredit to just the population as a whole that cutting the military is the uncontroversial and the easy option.
Right. Well, we appreciate that story, Richard. We're going to stay with our maritime theme. We'll navigate over to the South China Sea. The most recent Trumpet cover story talks about how China is taking over this critical trade route. We spoke about that on the Trumpet Hour last week, Wednesday. But for more evidence of just how powerful China is becoming, we have a story from Jeremiah Jacques.
Yeah, the situation there in the South China Sea really is continuing to heat up. Yesterday, China said that it's considering setting up another air defense identification zone, this time in the South China Sea. And the purpose of this zone, brace yourselves for this, would be to contain U.S. aggression. The South China Morning Post published a piece on Thursday which quotes a source in the People's Liberation Army saying, "If the U.S. military keeps making provocative moves to challenge China's sovereignty in the region, it will give China a good opportunity to declare an air defense identification zone in the South China Sea." Well, anyone who's been listening to the Trumpet Hour or just watching the situation in the South China Sea over the last few months would know that this statement is about as hypocritical as it could be. It has been China that has been provocative and bullying and aggressive in the South China Sea. It has been China that has been building islands well within the jurisdiction of nations such as the Philippines and Vietnam, and then militarizing these islands and using them to try to assert control of international shipping lanes. And it has been China that has been just trying to push and challenge the stability of the region. And America, for its part, has tried very gently, very gingerly even to a fault, to maintain that stability. The U.S. has conducted a few freedom of navigation exercises, and it has sort of politely asked the Chinese not to take these illegal actions to try to control the vital shipping lanes there. But even these very gentle, very gingerly measures are apparently too much for China. So now China calls those U.S. measures provocative, and it says that the U.S. may prompt China to set up another air defense identification zone. It's really too brazen and too hypocritical to even comprehend. But for modern China, this kind of behavior is actually not that unusual. Listeners may recall that back in 2013, China announced that it had established its first air defense identification zone. That one was on the East China Sea. And it basically just meant that any aircraft that wanted to fly through this massive piece of international airspace had to clear it with the Chinese government first, or else risk having their planes shot down into the sea. And an act like that is easy enough for a nation like America, which is militaristically much more powerful than China still, to deal with. All America would have to do is basically ignore the whole thing and demonstrate to the world that China does not own that international airspace, despite the really, you know, brazen claims to the contrary. And at that time, back in 2013, America did fly a pair of B-52 bombers through the East China Sea identification zone in order to serve that purpose. But the U.S. government told all of the American commercial airlines to comply with Beijing. It said, you know, if you're flying through there, make sure you get the approval of the Chinese government. And that decision just terrified Japan and South Korea and a lot of others, because America basically gave in on this ridiculous assertion of the Chinese. But the decision delighted China. Listen to the wording of this statement by the Chinese Foreign Ministry. This statement came just after the U.S. said that it would comply with China's guidelines for its commercial airliners. "The submission of flight plans to the competent Chinese authorities by airlines of relevant countries, including the United States, shows their constructive attitude and cooperative will." So just the word submission there. China loved that America did essentially submit to Chinese pressure. So the air defense identification zone that China set up in 2013 was a victory for China. Not a total one, but it did allow Beijing to show the world that America could be put into submission. And it let China really put American weakness on display for the whole planet. And now the Chinese are discussing another of these zones over an even more vital part of the South China Sea there. So this move could really heat things up in an already volatile part of the world, and it could be a major step toward China asserting its dominance in the region. So I would really just encourage listeners to read that article by Mr. Fleury in the most recent Trumpet, which lays all of this out in a powerful way.
Yeah, the title of that that story, China is Steering the World Toward War. It's the cover story of our July 2016 Trumpet edition, a really fantastic in-depth article. And also the story that Jeremiah was talking about here is China may deploy air defense identification zone in South China Sea to contain, quote, U.S. aggression. That is in this week's Trumpet Weekly. The Trumpet Weekly is a report that we produce each week for free. You can receive that in your email inbox every week. And all the stories that we're talking about on the program today are in this week's edition. Well, thanks for that, Jeremiah. We're going to go back now to the Middle East, to a country that the U.S. has invested a tremendous amount of manpower and resources, even American lives, and that is increasingly being lost. But who is benefiting from all of the effort that America has put into it? To answer that question, we'll go back to Anthony.
Well, just to answer your question right away, who is benefiting from this? It's Iran. And what's really fascinating about this development is that everyone knows that, and nearly everyone is reporting about that. The latest battle in Iraq has been in the city of Fallujah, and multiple reports that you find online are talking about Iran's fingerprints in that battle in Iran. Just one report, this one is from Reuters. It was written by Professor Mohammed Bazzi. He explained that the recent battle in Fallujah is merely, quote, the latest example of how Washington has looked the other way as Iran deepened its military involvement in Iraq over the past 2 years. What's happening in Fallujah right now is that the Islamic State took over that city, I think, in January 2014. And Iran has been trying to take back that city, fighting the Islamic State, and it really took advantage of the chaos in that city, and now it came as the knight in shining armor to try to rescue that city. This is just one example of Iran's strategy. In fact, it reveals a lot of what we've talked about before, about how Iran is taking advantage of those problems in the Middle East, most of which it creates. We've talked a lot about how Iran has either funded the Islamic State and other militia groups or just allowed them to prosper and flourish with the purpose of, in the future, coming in and solving the problems. This is something we've written about. Mr. Stephen Fleury talked about it on the radio program today. And the reason why we're talking about it is that it's just such big news that's developing. And we've been talking about this in the 1990s. We're talking about how Iraq would fall to Iran. We've been talking about why that would happen. And in the early 2000s, we've been talking about how it would happen. And that was when the United States invaded Iraq. So we started seeing how exactly that was going to play out. The United States coming into Iraq, removing all the opposition for Iran to take over. And that's what happened. But then you saw the emergence of the Islamic State, and Iran allowed that to happen. And now it's taking over and solving the problem their way.
This really is one of the most dramatic fulfillments of biblical prophecy that we see today. Exactly what we were talking about all those years ago. Gerald Fleury was talking about Iraq falling to Iran. I think it was back in 96, 97, right in that time frame, because of the prophecies that we see in Daniel and in the book of Psalms. And to see it unfolding exactly the way that he said all those years ago, it really is extraordinary. And you're right, it's a very important story. I think even if you don't understand about those biblical prophecies, if you just look at it from a standpoint of how much the United States invested in that country and what is happening to it now, there should be a whole lot more outrage and a whole lot more alarm among Americans. But, you know, it seems like the big story is a gorilla being shot. People are too concerned about sports or whatever else they have going on in their lives to even really care about what's happening here. But really extraordinary story. We thank you for bringing that to us. We were talking in our in the first segment about just how violent, how aggressive and angry, how much anger there is in American politics, a really concerning trend. To give us another angle to the story, we're going to go back to Andrew.
Right. Well, we talked a little bit in the first segment about the principle of backlash. You get these violent radical left movements burning police cars, throwing rocks, shutting down free speech rights, and people are getting concerned about that. And one of the more extreme manifestations of that concern is the rise of the militia movement. It was a movement that had gained strength in the 90s and then kind of weakened again under the Bush years and then has been gaining strength again more recently. Probably the two most public incidents of the rise of the militia movement would be the two Bundy family standoffs against the federal government that have occurred in the past 3 years. But there are some institutes like the Southern Poverty Law Center that estimates that there's as many as 276 armed militia movements in America. And that's, you have to take some of those statistics with a grain of salt. The Southern Poverty Law Center is a far left organization that has a bad habit of looking at a national militia organization and counting each state chapter as a separate one just for shock value. Mm-hmm. But still, most political analysts would realize that even though it's hard to determine how popular it is, the militia movement is becoming more popular, to the point where there are even three or four examples where, at a grassroots level, the Republican Party has appointed people with ties to the militia movement to be delegates to the Republican National Convention. And I guess for those who don't know the inner workings of American politics, the delegate's just one that he goes to the convention and then casts the vote, hopefully according to the same way his state voted. And there's one man we'll draw attention to this week because he just did an interview for Mother Jones, David Ryden, who has been appointed to be a delegate for Tennessee to go to the Republican National Convention and cast his vote for Mr. Donald Trump, who he did an interview where a fairly shocking interview where he goes through how America's trampling Second Amendment rights. He goes through how executive overreach is a problem. He goes through how the federal government's becoming too powerful. A lot of things are a lot of Americans are concerned about. And then even presents that he said, if this gets worse, he's saying that I have ties to the Tennessee militia movement. The point may come where we may need to eliminate or kill. Those are actually, he used both those words. Some of these politicians who are subverting our rights, which is something you'll see a lot about the militia movement. It's a very loose-knit group. Some of them get into some weird conspiracy theories. Some of them just get into like some vile racist ideas. But there are some of them, like this David Ryden, who if you hear them talk about the problems in America, they're fairly good at identifying what they are. But they always miss one big point, and there are not many news organizations other than The Trumpet that will tell you this point. And that's the fact is they buy into this falsehood that the American people are a just and pure and good and righteous people who are oppressed by political overlords in Washington, D.C. And so they try to paint themselves like the Founding Fathers, like, oh, we need to get guns and we need to go in here and free the people from these political overlords so we can restore our Constitution, totally glossing over the fact that both Obama administrations came to power with a majority of support from the people during the election. The first one was in a landslide. The second one was a little closer, which comes to a problem. Is when the founders framed the Constitution, someone like John Adams had said that it's predicated on the notion that, or the assumption that, over 50% of the people are going to do the right thing. If that's no longer the case, even laying aside Christian or moral obligations against just going in and killing politicians, even if you could do that, I mean, what's it going to change? You're basically, if devil's advocate, if a militia group could take over the government to, quote-unquote, restore the Constitution, they're going to be forced to choose between either instituting a minority right-wing government that forced the rest of the population to do things their way, or hold a free and fair election, which would probably just elect someone like Barack Obama right back in the first place.
It's a really, really important point, and I think you're right that it's the point that so many of the people who look at what's happening in the nation, they recognize problems, they see that there are real problems for America, that the nation is in trouble, and they can correctly identify so many of those, but they don't want to take responsibility, and they're not talking about the broad problem that the United States is not really being blessed right now. As much as we may talk about God bless America and sing God bless America, those blessings aren't coming right now. They're just, as we've been looking at all program long, there's really a lot of curses falling on this nation. And it's not because we put the wrong person into office. It's because there's something wrong with the people. And we've got to be willing to look at ourselves and assess, what are we doing wrong? Where have we gone off track? You can see it in the results of elections and the kinds of people that we're empowering. You can see it in the policies that they're putting into place. But there's also broad support for a lot of these policies that are really tearing apart families, that are fracturing the nation socially, that are tearing apart our moral fabric. So the problems are definitely far more than just the wrong person in office.
Right, yeah, the federal government is a mirror reflection of American society, and the only way to change that's going to be a moral or ethical revolution. Any sort of military solution to that problem is just going to bring civil war just as fast as these radical leftists chucking rocks at the police is going to bring civil war.
Well, we appreciate you bringing that story to us, Andrew. It's an important one. Remember, you can find us online at thetrumpet.com. Go there to receive a free subscription to The Trumpet Weekly. That's the report that we've been talking about, and the stories that we've been discussing are in this week's edition. We're going to finish the program with our lightning round of important news from all our panelists. That's coming up next.
This is the voice of The Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
It's time now for our lightning round. We'll take one last look at some of the headlines from this week that caught our attention. We'll start with Andrew.
Yes, well, another disturbing report's come out this week from the War is Boring blog, which is actually quite a credible site despite its ironic name, that one in three U.S. Navy fighter jets is not combat ready. The other two are under repairs at any given time. Well, the third one's actually doing surveillance missions, and then they just rotate them through. Just another indication that despite the fact that America's the world's biggest military spender, not all of that's going to effective usage.
All right, we'll go now to Richard.
On Tuesday, the European Parliament fast-tracked the creation of an armed European border force. This force, they said, would be armed. It would be able to deploy to a country within the EU even without that permission, that country's permission. Before the terrorist attacks and the immigration crisis of last summer, the EU was planning on having this border force in place by 2030 to 2035. Now they aim to have it set up by the end of summer. So the fast-tracking of this border force really shows quite dramatically how the immigration crisis, how those Paris attacks are pushing things along in Europe.
All right, we'll go now to Jeremiah.
Well, there are endorsements that a presidential candidate wants, and then there are endorsements that they don't want. An example of the second kind emerged on Tuesday when North Korea endorsed U.S. candidate Donald Trump. This was an article published by the North Korean government, or some representatives of that government, and it called Trump a wise politician who can liberate Americans. It went on to say that Trump was the best choice for American voters. And this story made me think of some words spoken by Napoleon Bonaparte long ago. He said, "Praise from enemies is suspicious. It cannot flatter an honorable man."
All right, we'll go back to Andrew.
Yeah, 10 a.m. Wednesday morning, there was another tragic shooting of two people on the UCLA campus in Los Angeles, California. According to Mother Jones Magazine, mass shootings in the United States have almost tripled since 2011.
All right, we'll go over to Anthony.
A new bill in Congress is set to demand that the Obama administration explain whether it paid Iran a $1.7 billion settlement as a ransom payment for American sailors. Now, the Obama administration just says that it was just a coincidence that the settlement was made just one day after the sailors were captured.
Hope we find out more about that. We'll go back to Richard now.
French Jews are in the most difficult situation they have experienced since World War II. That's a quote from the newly elected president of an umbrella group for French Jewish organizations. He said that this week. And Jews in Europe, they're being caught between rising Islamist anti-Semitism and rising far-right anti-Semitism, putting them in a very bad position.
All right, we'll go back to Andrew.
A former State Department Inspector General has accused Democratic presidential Hillary Clinton of lying by saying that her email usage while Secretary of State was no different than her predecessors, claiming that her last two predecessors would have never used a private email server for public use as Hillary Clinton did as Secretary of State.
All right, we'll go back now to Jeremiah.
Russia is imprisoning citizens who post items on social media that are critical of the government of President Vladimir Putin. Reports on Wednesday said that even if an individual engages with one of these posts by liking it or retweeting it, he could still face incarceration or lesser penalties. And at least 54 Russian citizens have already been imprisoned in recent months for sharing or liking or retweeting anti-government social media posts, and more than 200 others have been convicted but have faced lesser penalties so far.
All right, back to Anthony.
Does politics trump religion among Muslims? I'll let you decide, because on Sunday, Iran announced that it's canceling its participation in this year's pilgrimage to the Saudi Arabian city of Mecca. Now, if you're a devout Muslim, you are required to make this pilgrimage to Mecca at least once in a lifetime. But because of tension with Saudi Arabia, that has been canceled for Iranians.
All right, back to Richard.
German soldiers will begin training with police, the German government decided recently. The German constitution has strict limits on how involved the German army can be at home. We have an article in the Trumpet Weekly from one of our German writers giving some great insider perspective on why these restrictions are in place, why a lot of Germans are against this kind of thing. But what the German government's decision in weakening this is part of a growing trend of Germany throwing off its post-war restrictions and becoming a quote-unquote normal nation again, which for Germany will inevitably mean becoming a dominant military power within Europe.
A troubling history associated there. And we'll finish with Andrew.
All right. We'll finish this off by talking about the gorilla in the room in this week's news. At the Cincinnati Zoo this week, as you've probably heard if you've been within 30 feet of a television at any point in the past 7 days, a 17-year-old gorilla was fatally shot in order to protect a 4-year-old boy who fell into its enclosure. And while it is unfortunate that the gorilla had to be shot due to this accident, it is also shocking the number of animal rights activists around the nation who have been condemning this as a senseless act of violence, some even claiming that the child should have been allowed to die as its life was less important than an endangered species.
Amazing, amazing stuff. I'm Joel Hilliker. We're coming to the end of Trumpet Hour. Look us up online at thetrumpet.com, and we'll be happy to give you a free subscription to The Trumpet Weekly, our weekly news report. The stories that we talk about on the program are in this week's edition. Tell us what you think of the program by emailing us at letters@thetrumpet.com. I'd like to thank our panel today, Anthony Chabotterway, Jeremiah Jacques, Andrew Miller, and Richard Palmer.
It's great to be here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thanks to our technical staff, Dwight Falk, Josh Sloan, and Abraham Blondo. And I'll leave you with the words of Thomas Jefferson. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. It's been a pleasure. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.